I'm author and athlete Brad Kearns. Welcome to the Be Rad Podcast, where we explore ways to pursue peak performance with passion throughout life. Visit bradkearns.com for great resources on healthy eating, exercise, and lifestyle. And here we go with the show.
If you exercise and you sprint specifically, your HTT4 channel is properly polarized. So brain health, that's one of my favorite things. On race day, performance day in life, nothing is ever going to be perfect. And the sooner we learn that and we just learn how to tackle the obstacles in our life, the better off we are all around. Newsflash, I don't train every day. I actually only run 3 times a week at the track, and that workout is usually done within an hour to an hour and a half, depending on what's going on, you know, but starting from the warm-up to the finish.
Hey, I want to tell you about Schwenk Grills. This is a revolutionary portable gas infrared grill that uses the exact same heating technology as the world's best steakhouses. You heat up to 1500 degrees Fahrenheit to grill the juiciest steak you've ever tasted in as little as 3 minutes. Can you believe it? That's right. You do not have to go to those crowded, noisy, super overpriced steakhouses anymore when you have the same technology in your backyard. And the Schwenk portable infrared grill is not just for steak. You can make chicken wings, hamburgers, seafood, lobster, vegetables. I make salmon in 3 minutes. They even have a pizza stone accessory. I want you to visit their very informative and mouth-watering website at schwankgrills.com. That's S-C-H-W-A-N-K. Everything you cook, faster, juicier. The speed is so important, so convenient. There's a drip tray on the bottom, so you let the juices drip down. I love the bison burger, the venison burgers. That's my game. And then you can add a mixture of butter, spices, whatever you want, into the tray. Pour it back onto your meat or your salmon for a huge improvement in flavor. Are you getting hungry? I am. Let's go to schwankgrills.com, S-C-H-W-A-N-K, grills.com, and up your home cooking game. This is a one-of-a-kind grill. I have a great discount code for you, of course. It's Brad150 to save $150 off your purchase of a Schwenk grill. Hi, listeners. Let's get ready to rumble with Cynthia Monteleone, a world champion master's track and field athlete and a certified holistic metabolic analytics practitioner. She is full of positive energy, coming to you with a flower in her hair from the beautiful island of Maui, Hawaii. And we are going to rock with a very interesting, enthusiastic, and inspiring show. By the time you're done listening to the show, you are going to be ready to sprint. And she is a huge proponent of the overall health, fitness, and lifestyle benefits of sprinting. You're going to wait till the very end of the show, and she gives you this fabulous top 10 list of 10 reasons why sprinting is better than cardio for your fitness, your health, everything else. We talk about her background, where she ran track as a collegiate athlete, was a fine athlete, Division I at UNC Wilmington, took a 20-year break to go live real life, have 3 kids, move to Hawaii, and then somehow she got inspired to participate in Masters Track and Field and had this incredibly rapid ascension to winning the world title in her age group. And her time in the 400 meters is 57 seconds. And I don't know if you have reference points for that, but it's an extraordinary performance. And one reference point is that's faster than me. I'm hoping to do a 57 someday, but this woman is for real. But it's also faster than she ran in college as a D1 athlete. So she is turning back the clock like nobody's business. And she has a really amazing and unique blend of steep scientific knowledge as well as practical application of being an all-around world champion jock. So you'll hear her get into some science at the very end. It might get a little confusing when she mentions the metabolic pathways and things, but she is very well-read, well-researched, and she's applying all this research to a great success story list of clients, including all the way from Olympic athletes to everyday folks and to other elite masters performers. Her operation is called Metabolic Analytics of Maui. So I'm hoping you're going to hit some of these links that we provide in the show notes and listen to what she has to say. It's so inspiring. You can hear behind all these scientific rationale and these logistics and these technical details about her sprint workouts and performance is a tremendous amount of positive energy. And you'll get that from her Instagram site too. We've been trying to connect for a long time, and I'm so honored to talk to the champ, Cynthia Monteleone. Here we go. Oh my gosh, I have the world champ in front of me on the screen, Cynthia Monteleone from Hawaii, the beautiful Aloha. Island of Maui. Aloha. And my sister down the road, a recent new resident of Maui. So look forward to visiting there frequently and then coming and doing a track workout with you someday. But I'm going to have to build up to that great experience, because we are talking to a fast super mom here, people, and we have so many important topics to discuss. But I think as we get to know you here, I want to talk about this incredible journey where, hey, okay, you're a track runner in college. Everybody was something back in the day. Isn't that great? And then you have, was it a couple decades break before you set your sight back on the oval, and then had this extraordinary performance a couple of years back, winning the world title. So take us through that, Cynthia.
Yeah, sure. I love to share my story because I have a passion for helping others thrive. And if someone can be inspired or learn from my story to not give up on their goals or dreams, or just give that extra little bit, that's why I'm here. So I did earn a scholarship to Division I school, University of North Carolina, Wilmington. And I was actually a 400, 200 meter runner mostly, but my specialty ended up being the 500 indoors. I was top five in the East Coast in the 500. And I would say I was never like conference champion. I was never at the NCAA meet. I wasn't at that caliber, but I was good enough to still hang with, top five in the East Coast. So that being said, so 20 years later, I took a break. I got married. I had kids. I have three children. And right after I turned 40, I had just finished breastfeeding my youngest son. He was about two. And I thought, okay, well, it's time to, get back in shape, because I do encourage women not to lose too much body fat if they're breastfeeding, because it's really important that they don't introduce those toxins through their milk. So I would say, hey, women, don't look to get into super tip-top shape and lose all that body fat right away while you're still breastfeeding, because there's plenty of time for that. you need that fat to feed your child. So
explain what you're talking about when you're dropping body fat and dumping those fatty acids into the bloodstream.
Yeah, so your body does a great job cleaning up your system. And one of the ways it protects you is by storing toxins in body fat. And we can get into this a little bit more with how I do my analysis and how I measure body fat. My Olympic clients will put a little note to save that for later. But so just for instance, your toxins are stored in your body fat. So if you're losing a lot of body fat quickly, right after you have a child and you're breastfeeding, you can actually introduce those toxins into your breast milk, and then that gets fed to your baby, which you don't want. So if you just do it naturally, little by little, that sort of thing, don't rush it. You need to hold some of that body fat for fuel for, your child, to move fat for fuel to feed them. Then I would just say, be sure to tell mothers not to rush it. I think there's a lot of celebrity culture with, you see whoever it is, I don't know, I don't watch the Kardashians, but someone like that, and they're like, oh, look how skinny I got so quickly after my child. And I would like to anti-promote that because your health of your child is most important, not what your body looks like.
Okay. So here you are in your 40, yeah, early 40s. The kids are, getting going. They've had their wonderful start in life.
Mm-hmm. And my daughter was 11 at the time. Okay. And she said to me, Mom, I want to run track in college like you did. And I said, oh boy, okay, well, you know what? Let's get out on the track and let's do a 400 and see where we're at. And we got out there, and it was the hardest 400 I've ever run in my life. we tried our hardest and we both came across the line somewhere around 130, 140 seconds maybe. And I thought I was going to die. My whole body hurt. We started from there. And so when I then jumped into some track workouts a couple of weeks later, my bones felt like they were moving back together. It was very hard on my body. And I pulled my quad and my hamstring right away. Because I just jumped into it. I didn't know what I was doing really. Right. And so I stopped and I said, okay, you know what? I started to learn from this mentor, Charles Poliquin, through one of his students. I'm going to go to him himself and I'm going to learn from him. And I started my journey learning from Charles directly. And he kind of took me, I was very lucky because it's not always warm and fuzzy. I don't know if you've ever seen any videos of Charles or heard about him, but not always the warmest and fuzziest. But if he liked you, that was great.
So listeners, this guy is a legend in the strength training community. I believe he passed tragically recently.
2018. Yeah.
So that was really rough in his 50s. But he put out so much wonderful content and so highly respected amongst all manner of power explosive athletes for his unique training methods. So you're telling me you traveled from the islands to go hit this guy up and see if he would help you out.
I actually started off taking one of his classes and then took more and basically connected with him during class. I think he respected my questions. I'd like to think that's what happened. And he started sending me messages. And I was like, every time he would send me a message, I'd run to my husband. I'd say, oh yes, Charles sent me another message. Like, that's how much I revered this man because Brad, still years later, every single thing that Charles taught me, when I put it into practice with my clients or myself, it works 100% of the time. How many things that you know work 100% of the time? Like every time it works, what Charles said. And he was years ahead of the research, 20, 30 years ahead of all the research. And so it is tragic that we've lost him because we lost our oracle into the future, basically. Because things that, Andrew Huberman and different experts are talking about now is new discoveries. Charles already knew and taught us 20 years ago. So he did have a genetic heart issue. I can't say, I'm not his family, so I can't say exactly cause of death and that sort of thing. But he outlived his genetics by at least 20 years, I believe, doing his little biohacks as well. Now, he also did a lot of experimenting and that sort of thing. So his personal journey is his journey, but what he taught works 100% of the time. And I am so fortunate that I was able to take that and build myself from that knowledge and then now continue to change people's lives, whether it's an Olympian or whether it's someone with autoimmune issues, that sort of thing. So there I was on the track and I started to learn everything the right way from Charles and started to implement that. I got a fourth place ribbon at my first national championships. And
so this is how long after you started?
This was at age 41.
So a year or some later, you went to the nationals.
Yeah.
And placed up four. That's incredible progress.
Thank you. I ran a 61. So I went from a 130, 140 to a 61.
Nice. Just what is that? A 50% improvement rate in a year.
Yeah. It's just amazing but I dedicated a lot of time to it, three times a week training, still the same kind of schedule I have now, four times a week strength training, three times a week running. So, but the keys were, and we can talk about more, were what I was putting in my body for fuel and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there I was with my fourth place ribbon and man, I wanted to throw that thing in the trash because I lost by 0.1 and I thought, you know what? I never want a fourth place ribbon again. And so I hung it up in my gym for years as a reminder that I don't want a ribbon.
Throw darts at it. I have a dart contest.
I vowed I will come back next year and I will win the national championship.
And this stuff, people, you're talking about USA track and field masters meets. And this is like the level of performance is incredibly high when you're talking about the people that are dedicated to it and come to the nationals and fly there. These are really serious people. A lot of them have a strong background like you did, or maybe even beyond that. We're talking about former national level runners. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're going back the next year with revenge in your heart.
Yeah. So I show up for indoors. I don't run indoor track really, I did in college, but I hadn't run since college indoor track. So I show up at indoors and I won the 400 and the 200 to my surprise. And then the relays with my club. And then I came back outdoors and I won again. And that's the same one that I believe that was Spokane. So I believe that's where David Pitts was.
One of your clients who won my division and who I initially was so captivated by, and just seeing the level of performance. We joke about being in the older age groups, but tell us your time in that national title in the 400.
That time it was a 58 flat.
So yeah. If you're not familiar with that, people, it might be fun one day to go to your local running track and, you know, it's 400 meters. The straights are around 100, the curves are around 100. So try to run just a straightaway at 58 flat pace and you'll see what I'm talking about. That would be a 14 something, or let's say 15 seconds is giving you a 60 second pace.
Yeah.
It's an astonishing speed for anybody. Let alone a 42-year-old female who's had 20 years off and is coming back having a little fun with the flower. I don't think you had the flower in your hair when you were running 58 flat, or did you?
I did, yeah.
That's your signature. In fact, you can't let it go.
There was a tension with one of the other ladies who was very competitive in my age group who said, I wore a flower in my hair first. Why is she wearing a flower in her hair?
Ooh, the drama on the track every time.
Did I graduate to high school back again?
Right, that's right. Your times are as good as college, and so are the emotions from the competitors. That's hilarious.
Yeah, so whatever. I said, I'm from Maui. I don't know why she does it. But
yeah, that's right. Come on.
Yeah. So, so I ran that 58, and then I went to Spain that year for the World Championships. And I wasn't sponsored by my supplement company yet. And so I wasn't on all of the supplements that I now believe in and put people on and that sort of thing. I was kind of just finding my way at that point with my education. And I got a stomach bug on Wednesday. I ran my semifinal on a Wednesday and my final was on a Friday. And I had basically waterfall diarrhea for 2 days. So I was depleted. I showed up. I didn't even know if I could show up to my race. I called Charles. He was in the air actually to Estonia at the time. And he called me back right away and he said, immediately go to the nearest pharmacy and take 10 charcoal pills every hour until symptoms subside. And I ended up taking that whole darn bottle. It was like 80, 90 charcoal pills throughout the course of the evening.
Don't try this at home, people.
I was able to show up to my race. I could barely eat anything because if I ate, it would go right through, right? So I think I ate one piece of fruit or something. And I immediately felt like I showed up to my race and I ended up with a bronze. So I ended up running 58 low. I ran all my rounds in 58s and I was feeling fantastic. I was like jogging across the line in a 58 mid, felt amazing until that. And so I believe it was from some contaminated lettuce now that I traced it back. And so I actually blacked out a little after the race. They had to come bring me some water and food because that's how bad I was off, but I still got bronze because I was determined. So I got a bronze and I remember saying to the winner, hey, I only lost because I got sick. And she's like, oh yeah, whatever, you know? And again, I vowed I'm coming back and I'm going to win. And so 6 months later, I went to the World Indoor Championships and I won. And I beat the same lady who had beaten me at outdoors, which I told her, hey, I was just sick. I'm coming back better than ever. So that's what happened in that race. I ran a 58.1 indoor. And I also ran a 57 outdoor right before that, that following spring. So that was when I was 43. So it's 3 years ago. And I ran that 57. This is because you're a trackster. You'll appreciate this. I ran that 57 mid. It was a 57.5. Outdoor at my alma mater track in North Carolina. I was there for an alumni meet. I showed up to, just be a special guest. And I ran that. My coach was there. He wasn't coaching there anymore, but he was coaching another team. And he had happened to be bringing his team for the race. And he got my splits, which was great. It was just like college. It was so much fun. So here I was 22 years later, running, I think I ended up third or fourth. I think I ended up fourth in the race. All the girls were running 55s, 56, that sort of thing. I came across in 57. I was so proud of myself. And my coach was there getting my Swiss. My parents were there cheering for me. It was awesome. So it was a lot of fun. And so then I had got right after that went to indoor, and then that 58.1 was faster than my indoor best. So I ran faster than I did in college, 20 and I believe I could even go faster. Like I definitely, we can talk about this, but I've been working on my speed more. I'm consistently developing. I'm consistently finding new ways to make myself stronger and faster. And I always joke, like, one of these years I'm going to get slower, but not this year. I've been concentrating a little bit more on my speed and my 200. And I went 25 a couple times in practice this year, which I was very pleased at. About three times I ran 25. I didn't get very good optimal conditions in any local meets. You know, I had the wind against me, pouring rain, all the good stuff. So I ended up with like 26 low to mid for my times. Officially, but I'm still like, I know that that 25 was in me, and I, you know, it happened a few times and my coach was on it. So I'm very happy with that, that I'm working on that speed, continuing that speed as I get older.
Listeners can understand how excited I am to talk to you about all this stuff, because I talk all the time about the importance of setting these distinct goals and having that competitive intensity carried with you throughout life, and how that gets you up in the morning and it keeps you positive. It has so many mental health and hormonal benefits to your life. But one thing to understand is, like, when you're going for these marginal improvements and you're already at the elite level, you're world champion, and you're trying to get faster, the training is pretty difficult. So I'm wondering, to handle that kind of load and to do those workouts that are necessary to excel at that level can be really difficult. And I'm wondering if you have any problems like injuries that I complain about all the time, or just the fatigue or the rebounding necessary. And I know we're going to talk about supplements and diet and all those things that you have a tremendous level of expertise in.
All of that, as my coach likes to say, you have to have all of the pieces of the puzzle. So you have to have the strength training. I am a certified strength coach under Culligan training, under Charles. But I am not at the advanced level that my strength coach is. So I do write programs for people, but I rely on him to write my programs, because I think we're better when we give ourselves to another coach, honestly, because they know us, they can see things that we can't see ourselves. Or some people might stop before the workout is done, meaning they might talk themselves out of finishing the workout, or they might do the opposite. They might do too much and they might hurt themselves. So I feel like really having a coach is important, or having someone, at least a training partner, to keep you accountable. Either direction is really important. So that being said, I have a strength coach, Malcolm Bullion from Source Performance. He was one of Charles's top students. He handles a lot of professional athletes as well. He's in Arizona. I've had zero injuries, Brad, zero, since I started running. Since that first time I told you I pulled my quad and my hamstring.
Except Why? Your ego was injured in Spain when you got third and they didn't think you were going to go smoke them the next year, right?
Yeah, man. I wanted to throw that medal in the trash too, but third place, what? I came here for gold. I was a little early in my education with the supplements and things like that. But I dove into the research. I dove into how can I prevent this from ever happening again? And I got a great supplement company to sponsor me, ATP Labs. I'm now sponsored by both ATP Labs and Designs for Sport. I want to talk about that too, the quality of supplements after this. But so I started doing things like prebiotic fibers at night with probiotics, especially when I travel, to make sure that my gut bacteria are armed against foreign bacteria. Because when we travel to other places, even if it's Europe, it doesn't have to be a sketchy place like Mexico or Indonesia or something like that. It could be just that our bacteria is not used to the new bacteria. And so our immune system takes a little bit of a tank from that. So we got to make sure that we're supplementing with all different things that we need, foundational supplements like magnesium and zinc. But I also do take the prebiotic fiber and probiotics at night before I go to bed to make sure that I'm okay with that. And so the supplements, and then the timing of the workouts. I think a lot of people get this wrong. They think that I train every day, and I don't.
Super hard every day. She's out there puking on the side of the track. No.
Yeah, I am very protein forward. I consume 200 grams of protein a day minimum. And so people have asked me, is that because you train every day? And I'm like, newsflash, I don't train every day. I actually only run 3 times a week at the track. And that workout is usually done within an hour to an hour and a half, depending on what's going on, you know, but you know, starting from the warm up to the finish. But really within an hour, that workout's done. I strength train 4 times a week, but as I get closer to season, it drops to 2 to 3 times a week. Sometimes even once a week if I'm really, you know, close to peaking. And that is only an hour. Because Charles used to say, if you're in the gym longer than an hour, you're making friends, not progress. He had some really great one-liners.
I think important behind that, and you're also mentioning that your track workouts don't take that long. And I think people have a lot of flawed notions about this, that like this lady on Maui must be living and breathing and just obsessing about track day and night in order to become world champion. But you just rattled off your entire time commitment. And it's certainly within reach of almost anyone, not that your times are, but it's interesting to note.
7 hours a week.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean...
Maybe eight with like a little few minutes here and there.
watching video analysis of technique or whatever. But when Charles made that epic quote, I think what we're talking about here is if you are prolonging these workouts that are intense and explosive by nature, you're going to overproduce stress hormones, and it's going to be a recipe for breakdown, burnout, illness, and injury. And unfortunately, it's a very common thing, even among recreational exercisers, where they're going in. We know some ladies at the local health club will go and do back-to-back classes. So they're out there with heart rates jacked through the roof because they're not super fit to begin with. And they're pushing their bodies literally harder than the world champ here on the screen and on the mic. So I'd like to dig in more to
optimization of that. Yeah, and a lot of people are like, you look so great, you know, you look so muscular and your abs and this and that. Like I recently had a picture up on my story or something like that. I live in a bathing suit, so I live on an island. And
another excuse. Okay. She's got the hair, the flower in her hair. Cause it's Hawaii, live in a bathing suit. Cause it's 86 degrees all the time. Why not?
Like exercise clothes or bathing suit is pretty much my uniform. And they said, oh, you're so jacked and this and that. And I thought, how funny, because I haven't even lifted weights in like 4 weeks. This is all from intense sprinting, because as I taper my lifting, I intensify my sprinting. So that sprinting is a full body workout. And because I haven't been lifting, I can feel the full body soreness after I have a really solid day of sprinting at the track. The next day, in between my shoulder blades are sore. And that also tells me like where I need to work on too. Sometimes my triceps, sometimes I get like lactic here in my
chest. You're pointing to, if you're
listening. So a lot of people think sprinting is all lower body, but the upper body is so very important for sprinting. And then let's see, my quads are usually a little sore. My hamstrings are not usually sore. Sometimes my calves. So I can tell the full, but and my abs are sore. So the full body workout from sprinting, and we can go over it too, but I have a top 10 of why sprinting is better for aging than endurance training. So basically back to your question, I've got the strength training, the supplements, and then also the cycling of the workouts. I think that is very, very important to make sure you have enough recovery, because as you mentioned, these stress hormones, the cortisol, is through the roof. Well, as Charles pointed out, our species was designed that if we're getting chased by a tiger, we're not really interested in reproducing, although he used a lot of other identity. we're not interested in that. And so because our testosterone tanks reproductive hormones tank when our stress hormones are increased.
Or starving over the winter in our ancestral example, when there's not enough food, all the hormones are going to tank.
Yes, exactly. So we want to keep our hormones balanced and at optimal levels. And one of the best ways to do that is through the cycling and making sure you have enough recovery. Because, you know, we tear our muscle tissue when we train, but then we need it to go back together strong. So my nagging hamstring issue that I first had, Charles taught me, you know, within that first year or so, stop icing after you run and stop stretching. He had me stopping static stretching and it went away like that. And so I couldn't believe it because all these years, and even my coach was like, oh, make sure you ice, you know? And so I would leave the track and I would sit there on the drive home with an ice pack on my hamstring and it was not getting better. And I went to the physical therapist, I went to everyone, and it took me until Charles said, hey, stop icing and stop static stretching. And I was like, oh, okay. And I did, and it went away within a couple months and I never had an injury again. And that I believe is also due to the proper strength training techniques that Charles teaches and that I learned through like my strength coach, Malcolm. A lot of people are really into this mobility training right now, but this is incorporated into proper strength training. Mm-hmm. I also think it's important to note that I have never done an Olympic lift. All these sprinters are doing all these power Olympic lifts. We don't do that. I do eccentric training a lot, mm-hmm. And variations. I vary my cycle about every 4 weeks at least. And so all of these little tiny lessons that, again, are just all the way back to Charles and his teachings, keep me healthy. It keeps me from having some weird, quirk in my torque in my pelvis or something like that. I do get treated by my physical therapist sometimes, but like all these important strength training exercises keep my mobility, keep my stride length, keep my velocity, keep my my maximum force to the track, because when you sprint, you want to put maximum force down as you're pushing off. This all comes from proper strength training and proper track training. So my coach also knows, I used to show up and give him the list like, I'm a little tired. I'm a little sore from lifting. I'm a little this, I'm a little that. And then he'd go, okay, you're going to do a 500. You're going to split 59. I want you to come through a 116, you know, and I'll be like, oh, okay. Like I learned very quickly. He doesn't care. And so I stopped giving him the list and I ended up performing in practice a lot better because I just showed up and I was like, instead of thinking what felt a little off with me, I felt like, okay, I'm going to dominate this workout no matter what, because let's face it, on race day, whether it's your work is your performance, like a meeting or something like that. On race day, performance day in life, nothing is ever going to be perfect. And the sooner we learn that and we just learn how to tackle the obstacles in our life, the better off we are all around. So whether that's a track workout or a meeting or your job or whatever it may be, best to concentrate on what we're going to be good at and have that optimism and that positive attitude than to think about, oh, I might feel a little freaky. I'm old. I'm this. I'm that. You know, don't give yourself an excuse. That's what I would say. So those are the major elements. I also went to an animal protein based diet. I eat steak an hour before I run the 400. The carnosine buffers. It used to be lactic acid, right? But now they say it's not lactic acid. It's a calcium ion issue.
Right. Right.
Right. So
a minor nuance. It's what everybody thinks.
Yeah.
But it's the lactate is used for fuel. And so the burning sensation is not from, it's not from lactate. Lactate is a valuable energy source, but it's from something about the acid accumulation in the, say it again.
Well, they believe it's possibly the lack of calcium ions. They actually don't even know. They just know that the lactate coincides with the fatigue. So now I say fatigue, like I said, lactic acid here earlier, but really it's just the fatigue. So now I try to say fatigue. So the carnosine buffers the fatigue. I have all that B12, folate, all the really, all the carnitine, all the things you need for power and explosiveness and a little bit of endurance, because red meat has that fat. And I have become more fat fuel adapted and protein adapted. So I kind of get my carbs through protein because of gluconeogenesis. I do have a little bit of starchy carbs at night to wind down and make sure I still have some serotonin for restful sleep. That's important for people to know. I think a lot of times people make the mistake and have their carbs in the morning, and then they wonder why they're a little bit having a little slump midday or even mid-morning. And it's because your neurotransmitters are firing off of what you're eating. So if you eat red meat for breakfast, for instance, you're firing acetylcholine and dopamine, especially if you're adding some, you know, some nuts with it, or maybe an egg that's high in choline, keeps your brain firing. So you really want to stimulate that for longevity and energy throughout the day, and then start to introduce your tryptophan from poultry and your serotonin later in the evenings as you want to wind down to sleep. So, I mean, again, Brad, like there's like so many things, little things that go into what, how did this happen? How did I end up running faster at age 43 than I did in my 20s? Like, but, and it's all of these little things. And how do I keep getting faster and keep staying healthy and not getting injured? It's all of these little things. That's the long story.
Let's go a little more detail on your animal-based diet. Sure. Listeners can hear you on some other podcasts. I heard you on Peak Human with Brian. That was a great show. Another track guy geeking out a little bit on track and all that. And I'm assuming, getting an appropriate level of carbs to replenish glycogen because you're training so hard. And so
under 80 grams a day.
Okay. So you're in that camp of, you're definitely going to call that low carb by comparison to anything, especially
it's not like keto where it would be sub 20. So it's like a keto carnivore paleo blend. I do eat vegetables still. I do believe in polyphenols from berries, the antioxidants, resveratrol from blueberries. I think it's very important for everyone. Sometimes, depending on my male clients, sometimes they have to supplement resveratrol if they're starting to get the man boobs, whether they have sufficient amount. I can tell by their body fat. I can tell by their bicep measurement how their testosterone is.
Really?
Tricep tells me estrogen. It's one of the estrogen.
What, the actual circumference relating to body weight or height, or what are you looking for?
It's the measurement of the body fat. Mm-hmm. And
so
the ratio
you're measuring. Measuring bicep circumference against what?
No, I'm just measuring the millimeters. And I can tell by, so for instance, I'm about a 2.5.
2.5 millimeters of pinch or something?
Yeah, it's, yeah. So, you know, the calipers measure.
Yep. Yeah, so you have to have calipers.
So I measure I measure, so I find the peak of the bicep and then I pinch it and pull it. So as Charles
said, pulling
her
bicep on camera, people.
All of your measurements should look like penis skin. That's what Charles said.
Oh, there goes our pull quote for the show on Instagram. Yeah.
So, for instance, men, when their pecs are too high, when their ratio is too high from their pecs and their triceps, I can tell what they drink. If they drink, I can tell what they drink from their tricep to pec to calf ratio. And knee, and their knee. I can tell how much they drink from their knee, and I can tell what they drink from their calf and their pec ratio, if it's beer or alcohol. Or like
you mean, martini shaken, not stirred, like James Bond. You can tell what they're drinking.
It's not exactly the brand, but I can tell if it's beer or if they're a wine drinker. I can tell if they're a wine drinker, a beer drinker, or a cocktail drinker, and I can tell how many drinks per week they have.
Watch out.
It's based in Chinese medicine. Mm. And then Charles basically figured out this algorithm to measure the ratios, because the ratios matter. So for instance, if they have the men have a very good testosterone measurement, low, meaning low on the measurement, and then their pec is a little bit out of range, it's out of proportion, then that means that they have the enzyme aromatase that is converting their testosterone to estrogen. And so then I will give them dietary, saying like, okay, for instance, for that, I'll just give your listeners a little clue as to that. If that's happening, if you know someone who's getting man boobs, they need to start eating zinc-rich foods, which boosts testosterone, but also helps balance hormones. So shellfish, like oysters, mussels, shrimp, that sort of thing. That would be their number one protein, even before red meat, which is also high in zinc. And then I would put them on certain supplements like resveratrol and different things to detoxify the estrogens and to stop the conversion of aromatase. So if that makes sense.
Very
all
interesting.
These things matter and everything's individual. So I have an individual protocol And when I just worked with Emma McGowan, she is phenomenal. I don't know if you follow her, but she's 53 or 54. And she just won the 100, 200 and came in silver in the 400 at the recent World Championships. She ran faster than she ran 3 years ago. She ran a low 26. She ran a high 12, she was sub 13. Oof. And then she ran a 60 in her 400.
This is a 53-year-old female?
Yes.
Wow.
And so she called me in January, and for instance, and we did a whole consultation, and she was having menopausal issues. She wasn't sleeping well, this sort of thing. And so I put her on a specific protocol to her issues. And so people are always asking her, what are you taking? What should I take? And she's like, you have to call Cynthia because she just helped me with my health. And my performances as a result got better. Like, I'm not taking any performance stimulants. That's not what's going on here. I'm just taking care of my health and my body. And I think that's a really valuable lesson for your listeners, is that you don't have to be a world champion seeking track athlete to be a champion in your life and health. Like, what matters is that you take care of your body. All of the energy and all of the feel good, you know, the anti-depression, the motivation to get things done in your day, the love for your family, all of those things come when you take care of your body. So my passion is to help other people take care of their bodies.
So Charles, you call him your mentor, and he was teaching you all these tips and tricks. But as far as your coach specifically for track preparation, that you're talking about a different coach. Are you working directly, or is this a remote relationship?
And regarding Charles, like, I got the foundational tips and tricks from him, and then I continued that research on to even further go in depth on things. So I read about 50 medical journal articles a week, at least. I try to read a couple of books a week. Charles said one of the best things you could do is learn to speed read. So I try to intake a lot of information. I'll pick like one subject, like Alzheimer's or tocotrienols or something, like, you know, and I just dive into all of the research. I read all of it, the pros, the cons, you know, which, how the mechanisms are working. And I start to read the patterns. And I think that's where I found that my specialty goes above and beyond just general metabolics that Charles taught, is because I really dive in and read the patterns per individual. That being said, my track coach is amazing. His name is Rudy Huber. And he, I think, is Satan reincarnated, because he loves to torture me on the track. No, but I love it too. I love the challenge of the workouts. And he's a former decathlete, former Division I runner himself. I believe he is, what age group are you? I think he's turning into the 55 age group, actually.
I'm 55 to 59 age group.
Yeah, I think he's going into that group next year. And so he's thinking about having a comeback, but he won a couple of Masters Championship back in the day, years ago, when he, like, I think late 30s, early 40s. But he's mostly just passionate about coaching kids. He's a high school coach. He's coached Olympians. He knows track inside and out, and he's got the perfect coach's eye, in my opinion. And when, if you don't know what that is, it's when you look at an athlete and you can tell immediately when they start running what their issues are, how they can become stronger, what workouts they need, what type of runner they are. And you can see pretty much the future, how they're going to develop if they do these things right.
Hey, man, how's your sexual function? Oh, uncomfortable talking about it? Look, we talk about our injured knees, our belly fat, so it's time to get focused on function. I want to tell you about GainsWave. This is a cutting-edge protocol where a handheld device sends low-intensity shock waves into your penile blood vessels to stimulate a healing response and promote increased blood circulation and the growth of new blood vessels. A skilled practitioner puts the GainsWave magic wand onto your magic wand, and after a series of 6 to 12 very brief treatments, which are painless but extremely effective, you get real results. GainsWave reports an 80% success rate. Now, We know that popping pills is a popular penile protocol, but when you're working with clogged pipes, you just get a temporary band-aid effect when you take prescription drugs. Gainswave addresses the cause of age-related decline by stimulating growth factors and activating dormant stem cells. Translation: stronger, harder, more sustainable erections. I learned about Gainswave from my podcast guest, Dr. Judson Brandeis, at the Brandeis MD Clinic in Northern California, and there's a robust network of Gainswave providers that you can find on their website near you. Complete a series of treatments, and the beneficial effects will last for a long time, especially if you eat and exercise well to promote overall vascular health. It's a tune-up for your equipment, and while it's great for ED, Gainswave is for any man that wants to combat the effects of aging and get a little boost for your A-game. So please visit gainswave.com/Brad. That's GAINSWAVE.com/BRAD to find a practitioner in your area, and you can take advantage of my special promotion. Buy 6 treatments and get one free. You have nothing to lose and lots to gain from gainswave.com/Brad.
Am I correct? Have you experienced that before?
That sounds like a pretty awesome coach. I can't say, yeah, I've had any masters like that. I appreciate Phil Maffetone's work a lot with the endurance athletes, and he proclaims that his 180 minus age formula was originally devised by looking at the change in the athlete's gait when they hit a certain heart rate, indicating that the metabolic stress was increasing. And so it's a non-scientific calculation, but, you know, so relevant. And then you can go recalibrate that or validate that in the lab when you look at gas exchange. And indeed, the person's aerobic maximum is around 70 to 73% of max heart rate, which oftentimes corresponds with a change in gait. And so those nuances that the coaches notice, I read Dan Pfaff's newsletter. I'm sure you've heard of him. And he talks in those terms where it's way beyond the mechanics and the logistics. And I think anyone listening that's in the personal trainer realm, where we have this fixation on the mechanics of athletic training rather than on the nuances. And I think it's great to hear the content from you. And people, if you don't believe her about reading all these journals, just go hit her Instagram for a moment and you'll see these really thoughtful and detailed commentary with scientific reference, and same with on your website. So it is going in deep here, and then walking your talk too with the performances.
Yeah, and with my clients' performances. So Annie Kuntz, for instance, when I met her, she was having like a plateau in performances, and she was a little bit concerned about losing her grant money and things like that. And the nutritionist that they were working with at the Olympic Training Center was saying things like, oh, you're doing everything right. And when she was like, clearly I'm not, because I'm almost 20% body fat and my performances aren't getting better. And so, I kind of opened her mind to everything, did an analysis, she bought in, she did everything. Her issue was, I said, let's put a pin in talking about the body fat and the toxins. So her issue was she was having a type of estrogen dominance due to toxins held in her hamstrings due to environmental factors like scented candles, beauty products, lotions, all of these chemicals were getting stored in her hamstrings as toxins. So this is one of the ways that women especially have issues, where they will store their body fat in their lower legs and their butt area. We did the whole like basic flush of these toxins and changed her eating habits and got rid of all of the toxins in her environment. And within, I came back, I think 8 weeks later, she had gone from 19% body fat, I believe 18 point something, maybe 19, to 12.5% body fat that quickly, because of eliminating these toxins. And her performances started skyrocketing. I don't know if you know the photographer Jeff Cohen. He takes all the pictures of the track athletes. You should follow him, Jeff Cohen Photo. He knows all the athletes because he's constantly taking professional pictures. And I remember she told me, he said to her, like, I don't know what you've been doing, but your body has totally changed, you know? And she was like, oh, I have this great metabolic practitioner and this and that. She went on to win the national championship and go to the Olympics. So, and then my other client that year, Maggie Malone, they're both still my clients, but that year particularly, they're thriving. Maggie, when I met her right after Annie, she was having autoimmune issues and she was in a cycle of all kinds of antibiotics and this and that, and nothing was getting better. She was like fatigued to the point where she didn't want to get out of bed. And to be a former Olympian, and she's a javelin thrower, and then to feel that way and have gained all this weight and this and that, like, gosh, that must be crushing, you know? And I said, oh, well, I can fix this. Like, we just need to do this, stop doing this, take this, start eating this. And she came back not only to win the national championship and go to her second Olympics, but she broke the American record twice last year. So for me, that's why I do this. I love when my clients win medals way more than even I do. That's an example of what I do with being a metabolic practitioner and how all of these things matter in our life. And why can't we all be this way, right? Well, a lot of people are stuck in the federal guidelines or the food pyramid, and now this ridiculous guidelines. I don't know if you've seen it. I forgot what it's called. There's a new name for it, but it's saying basically like a score, frosted mini wheats you should eat a lot of.
Oh, yeah, I saw the
butter. You should not
post about that. Yeah, they were scoring different foods.
Yeah.
And it seemed pretty random and maybe influenced by marketing dollars or something. But yeah, frosted mini wheats was way up there with a high score. And then, yeah, you know, red meat was getting disparaged. Just the same old stuff that we've heard for decades. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just come in and I talk about the benefits of red meat. And, I just really, again, I pinpoint it per individual, but there is a general idea that frosted mini wheats are not going to help your athletic performance. And I take this all the way down to my high school kids, the ones who will listen. My husband's been a wrestling coach for 20 years. We had the Nenea Estrella. She's the basically won the best high school wrestler award of the whole nation. She's a four-time state champion here in Hawaii. She actually just signed with Iowa for the first D1 women's wrestling program. She just won Pan Ams last week. She won the US Open this year. She's one of my clients, but she's like a daughter to me. She actually lived with us and we fed her for 2 years and trained her right here in my gym, and taught her all of the things, same things that Charles taught me that I get to pass on to her. And, she eats the steak before she competes as well. And you look at like, popular wrestling nutritionists accounts and stuff on Instagram, and it's like the opposite again. It's like what's the mini wheats thing? And I thought, gosh, no wonder these kids are not thriving. So it's really special for my husband and I to be able to share this with the young people, because they then tell their families and then their families get healthier. So we're making a difference just by this one, you know, this one seemingly drop in the ocean, but it's creating a movement and a current to helping other people, their whole future generation, get healthier, and they influence their family and friends.
I wonder what your awareness is of the dietary practices of the elite athletes. I had a guest on my podcast, Lindsay Barra. Her podcast is called Food of the Gods, and she studies how elite athletes fuel and train for peak performance in all these different sports: golf, race driving, basketball, baseball. And I'm familiar a little tiny bit with athletes here and there in different sports, and it seems like they have a long way to go to get dietary optimization. I think they're still trafficking in some of the processed stuff that most humans eat. I'm sure there's some other examples, but she also referenced an interesting point that there was little or no examples of elite athletes engaging in these restrictive dietary practices that are so popular in the ancestral or the progressive health movement. So there wasn't a lot of keto athletes competing in the world championships in Oregon last week, or racing cars at Indy 500, or people, really deep into intermittent fasting and some of these things. And that was something.
I wonder how is she finding that out? Is she interviewing every single athlete? Because I can tell you that my athletes that were there, they definitely eat that way. And they're not only do they eat that way, they're thriving that way. And maybe she didn't interview them, or maybe they're not getting asked, or maybe they don't want to tell. Sometimes they don't want to tell.
I imagine there's a percentage of athletes who are deep into this with coaching and evolve coaches rather than your nutritionist every day down the street. But I wonder if it's just a matter of time before they catch on, or, I mean, in your case,
that's a good question, because I can tell you from my experience, they are, how can we put this? It's the same way with the carnivore eating. It's coming down from the top. It's coming down from the government guidelines. Mm-hmm. Those government guidelines then are set to teach nutrition, head nutritionists at schools what to teach. Then those head nutritionists teach in their universities the nutritionists. And then the nutritionists are hired at these programs to teach the athletes. And so that's how you end up with something like the Olympic Training Center serving rainbow sprinkle pancakes to the athletes.
What kind of pancake? What'd you
rainbow
say?
Sprinkles. Rainbow sprinkle pancakes for breakfast.
At the Olympic Training Center?
Yeah. And I was goodness. My husband's like, are the Russians working in the kitchen? What's going on? Were you trying to sabotage our athletes? They're so into their Powerade slushies there, which I'm very anti Powerade, Gatorade, because nobody needs to be consuming all those artificial ingredients, inflammation, hello, corn syrup, you know, or even if it's natural cane sugar, it's still too much, artificial colors, that sort of thing, even artificial sweeteners if it's unsweetened. But they have the sweetened Powerade slushie machine in the Olympic Training Center. And not only that, they brought it with them to Doha and they were forcing it on all the athletes. Of course, my athletes were not having it. They have a different protocol. They don't touch any of the food that's given to them at foreign competitions. They don't touch it. They control their food through restaurants and things like that. Right. And I'm going, really, Powerade slushies. We really think that that's what's going to send them, you know, to the next level. So I think that what's happening is, the corporations are spending so much money in these nutrition programs. And I'm not saying this out of just conspiracy theory. I'm telling you that one of my Olympians told me at his college, he knew there was something wrong when the head nutritionist was pushing Pop-Tarts on them. And he's like, I don't know a lot about nutrition, but it seems like Pop-Tarts was not the best thing. And she said, we need the sugar. We need the Gatorade with the sugar and we need the Pop-Tarts. And it turns out that she's one on the board for Kellogg's and they're donating so much money to the millions to the nutrition program. So then you have these nutritionists that graduate from that program and then they get hired. And then this is where all of this information is coming. So Charles used to say, I remember in one of the metabolic classes, he said, is anyone here a registered dietitian or a trained nutritionist? And a couple of people raised their hand and he said, you either have to unlearn everything that you've learned or get the fuck out. Mm. And so they were like, oh, okay, no, we're here to learn, you know? So that's how strict my upbringing through Charles was. And that's how strict I am with my athletes. And that's how strict I am when it comes to people telling me stupid crap, like you need Pop-Tarts and sugar's not bad for you. Because I've seen the detrimental effects of these sugars. Now I keep my sugars under 15 grams a day. Mm-hmm. And that includes the berries that I might be eating. And that's, you know, if you start counting sugars, it's not a lot. And I keep like I said, I keep my starchy carbs till later in the day. And it's usually something like root vegetables. I think that it's really important that there is a revolution in the food industry. And people like you and I are here to help say, hey, it does work for athletes. And maybe Game Changers isn't the way.
That's the name of a documentary, people, that we don't want you to see. Food Lies intro. I'm going to put that link in the show notes, too, from Brian, because that was a fantastic intro to the great work that he's been doing, working on it for many years and kind of dispelling some of this nonsense that especially is delivered through a propaganda type documentary.
Yeah. So I think what a lot of people don't have time to do their own research, but when you start doing your own research, you find a lot and you find a lot of, like, for instance, EMFs. My athletes aren't allowed to use AirPods. So anytime I see an athlete using AirPods, I just shake my head. Like,
dang, you're really, now you got to convince me to ditch those because they're pretty convenient. I used to go with a wire.
Wired, so that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I do that in the car now. But when I'm working out, it's just so inconvenient to have the wire there. I'm going to hit it with my hand or something doing running drills. And so let's give a big plug here. We got to ditch these. Why are they so bad?
The AirPods, you're microwaving your brain. And the thing is that if you listen to any of the media in the United States, you're not going to find anything on it. Rarely anything.
But you're going to find studies. You're going to find studies saying they're just fine is what you're going to find.
Yeah. But if you look at, research out of Europe, oh my gosh, they've done tons of research, Germany and that sort of thing. And that's one of the things, my mentor taught us he actually spoke 12 languages, so he was able to do research in the other languages. I only speak a little bit of German, a little bit of Spanish, but I try to still stick to the English reading because scientific terms are challenging as they are. But so there's tons of research on EMFs and Bluetooth, all of it, tons, if you just start looking. And the other thing is, one of my clients I had here in Maui, her sister was on the team that created Bluetooth. And she told me, when I start telling her, oh, I don't want you to use Bluetooth, she'll, oh yeah, you don't have to tell me. My sister was on the team that created Bluetooth, and none of them will use Bluetooth after the studies that they did. And I was like, well, that's icing on the cake for me, you know, straight from the horse's mouth. I'm not, that's, yeah, besides all the research that I've done. So things like that, I really try to help people, whether, again, they're a local client who's having autoimmune issues, or someone who's trying to get pregnant. I get a lot of people who are trying to conceive. I help make babies. That's the best. Or it's an Olympian. I'm like, no AirPods. You know, make sure your room is dark like a cave when you sleep. So there are a lot of other lifestyle changes that we can make. And I love that Brian is putting that documentary out, because we are very aligned in our thinking and our beliefs. And I can't wait for it. Yeah.
So back to your workouts, you're under the tutelage of the coach. And so they're designing, you mentioned that you were instructed to hit certain split times at one of the workouts that you mentioned, going through in 59 and doing a 500. Now, are these calculated to be percentages of your absolute best racing time? You could run a 57 in the 400, but you're not going out there and doing that during training. Rarely or if ever. And so give us some idea of like the percentage that you're working within your capacity so that you can recover and rebuild and head back to the track 3 days a week.
Yeah. Great question. So with anything, again, the cycling matters. We call it periodization in strength training. Same with track. You really need to periodize your workouts. Even if you are not, let's just say for the person listening who's not going to compete, I'm not planning on competing, but they just want to sprint for their health. I highly, highly recommend periodizing your strength training and your running workouts. So you're going to go a little bit more longer distances with less rest in the fall, in the early season. You kind of basically take that and you start to taper the distance and give yourself more rest, but increase the intensity. So my coach does that pretty quickly, especially if I am running indoors. I only have a certain amount of time. I have to do a double peak if I'm running indoor and outdoor. I had a nice time this year, really not competing, just running to run for the sake of having fun. It was great. So I didn't have to worry about those peaks really. But I still periodized it to peak, somewhere around May outdoors. And then I did a mini peak like recently that wasn't too crazy. So basically, you're going to increase the intensity as you get approach the summer, and you want to peak maybe midsummer, because that's when, if you did want to compete, that's when you would compete. And then you take some time off, maybe August, September, and then pick it back up again. But off means, just kind of do whatever you want to do to relax and get some training in. I do some strongman training, that sort of thing. But that being said, my speed coach friend from Canada found it very interesting when he analyzed my workouts that I mostly run my workouts within 90 to 95% of my race pace for whatever distance it is. So if it's a 500, a 400, a 300, a 200, a 100, I'm running at 95%. I'm not ever really running at 100% because that promotes injury as well. I think that you can do a few accelerations of that. And then, maybe a few accelerations, you're properly warmed up, and then you can hit maybe some a short distance day with some maximum velocity. But even then, if you're doing repetition, you're doing intervals, you're not doing 100%. I think that's how you get injured. So keeping it within the 90s, I think, is a great way to spark all your catecholamines, your dopamine, all these great neurological elements that help you burn visceral fat, that help you increase BDNF. These are some of my top 10 reasons why I'm getting into already, but increasing BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It's like protein that's fertilizer for your brain. It keeps your brain active. It keeps it neuroplastic. It keeps you learning. So this increases more during sprinting than endurance training. So when women turn 40, for some reason, they're like, oh, my hormones are shifting and starting to gain a little weight. They think automatically, oh, I'm going to start training for a marathon. And what happens? They're riddled with overuse injury. They're doing this long, slow shuffle jog and not losing their belly fat, not losing visceral fat. Their hormones start to get out of balance because they're increasing the stress hormones by running too long, working out too long. All of these things, they're not getting muscle mass because they're becoming catabolic. Their protein's getting eaten by doing too much for too long. Whereas the sprinting, if you look at a sprinter and a distance runner, it's clear as day, you maintain muscle mass. And muscle, as we know from Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, is the organ of longevity. It's what keeps us young. It releases myokines that are good for us. So we really need to keep this muscle through resistance training and sprinting. Back to sprinting again. Sprinting is like one of these miracle things that people are afraid to do. But if you just prepare your body a little bit with walking up hills, strength training, you can do it.
Right. You can sprint on a bicycle.
Yeah. A 95% is basically to come back to where I live my life. And sometimes that's extremely difficult depending on the rest period. My coach like sometimes gives us this nutty, I remember just thinking like, you are crazy. One of these workouts this spring, he gave us, my training partners from Canada, he comes down in the spring and he runs, he's actually, I think about your age too. And he runs the 100, 200, doesn't want to have anything to do with the 400. And he ran a 26 mid this, or 26 low this season. So he was really happy about that. But we ran a workout, for instance, and we do variations on the multiple 200s. So you run, one of my favorite workouts is that any of your viewers can do at home is run a 200, which is halfway around the track, and then walk a 200. Mm. Now, better to time your rest to make sure you're not walking for like 6 minutes one time and 3 minutes another time. Usually it should be around 3 minutes. So let's say you have like 2.5 to 3 minutes rest between the 200s. You could do like 6 to 8 of those, for instance, as a good solid beginner workout to see where you are and challenging. So we do variations on that. Sometimes he has us do 10 200s and sometimes we have only a minute rest. Sometimes we have 2 minutes rest. So this particular workout, we had to do 200s in flats, Brad. In flats, which means, the spikes are going to make us go faster for those listeners. Flats are a little challenging, adds a second or two to time at 29 to 30 seconds with 1 minute rest. Okay, how many of those can we do? Oh my God, I think I managed like 5 and I thought I was going to die. We had to do 6. I died in the last one, but I just couldn't even, like, that's insanity to me. And I was looking at him like, you're crazy. But so he'll challenge us as to how many. But again, we're still at that 95% range because maybe I run like a 26, 27, usually 26, maybe 25 if I'm running fast at that point. But it's that same percentage. We're living at that, but he's changing the rest periods to give us the challenge.
I think that's going to carry us right into your top 10 list of why sprinting is better than cardio for fat loss and gut health. And you're telling that story about the hypothetical 40-year-old that wants to go get in shape, and immediately the brain and society and our cultural programming puts this completing a marathon on a pedestal. Or I'm from the triathlon scene and everybody was always aspiring to do an Ironman. And it's important to second guess that and say, why don't you try to go fast on a shorter race and be more of an athlete rather than just shuffling along? Not to denigrate, you know, if that's your passion and you want to finish that marathon and it's a bucket list item, ideally it would be a bucket list item rather than an every year over and over putting your body through that. What you were saying about Dr. Gabrielle Lyon's work, and I'm sure you've seen John Jaquish and his posts about how there's a lot of research that cardiovascular, you know, endurance training promotes fat storage, and strength training, power sprinting, promotes fat reduction. None more so than sprinting because of the impact, the high impact nature. There's a strong message sending to your genetic signaling to drop excess body fat, because the penalty for running along and doing one lap or doing half a lap with excess body fat is severe, unlike the penalty for riding around 100 miles with a lot of extra body fat, as we see all the time with those endurance training people.
Yeah. Okay. So number one, and we've talked about a few of these, but I'm just going to go through the top 10 list. Number one is better hormone balance. So again, you're a woman, even a man, you're hitting middle age. Your hormones are starting to change. This is just, you know, how the natural cycle of things. Your men are losing testosterone, women are losing estrogen. We want a better transition into midlife, whether it's menopause for women, and you need better hormone balance. So sprinting gives a better hormone balance through not having so much cortisol and the stress hormones, as we talked about. You're increasing your natural reproductive hormones by not having this cortisol from long continuous training. Okay, so number two.
On number one, to be clear, people, when you go and do a high intensity workout, you are getting a profound spike in the stress hormones, but it's the way that our bodies design. Like Charles Poliquin said, when the lion is chasing you, you want all those stress hormones to be flooding your bloodstream. And then because Cynthia's leaving the track within an hour, the hormones go down, you recalibrate back to homeostasis, and you had what's called an appropriate fight or flight stimulation versus going and doing back-to-back exercise classes at the gym where the stress hormones are floating around too long and then they become catabolic and have those after effects. So it's the short duration of high stress workouts that's the hormone balance magic. Number two. Yeah,
exactly. And that actually helps you deal with stress in your life.
Good
better.
Point. Right. Yeah,
a short practice. You're that little bit of that cortisol that's raised when you're doing that intense exercise, it prepares you for cortisol spikes that might come from stress in your life. So you're able to deal with it better. And it's not prolonged, so it's not becoming a problem. It's not chronic cortisol. It's short, like you said, short duration. So it actually better prepares you. There's so many scientific mechanisms that we go into, but it's just, you know, it gets to be too much. But that's the basic message. Is that short duration exercise better prepares you for, you know, when life comes at you. So that
you finish your track workout, you feel great, and then you get a traffic jam on the way home and you're just chilling with the flower in your hair. You don't care. We'll see what happens when we get up to the site and
traffic jams
whatever.
Maui come from when people look at the whales, so that's not too bad.
Yeah.
But you just look out and the whales are reaching. But okay. So number two, a lot of people don't know about this one. But microbacteria in your microbiome is dictated by what foods you eat and what type of exercise you do. So if you are doing long endurance training, your bacteria changes in order to create vitamins and fuel to keep you alive and keep you going. So the longer the ultra endurance type athletes are the worst with their microbacteria. And when I go deep into the studies, it seems that the one microbacteria called Prevotella is abundant in endurance athletes. And that one, if it's overabundance, actually leads to degenerative diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, even worse responses to respiratory illnesses like COVID. So if you look up Prevotella overabundance, a lot of really bad things. The other thing that comes from Prevotella is if you look it up, what types of foods increase Prevotella, it's vegetarianism. Or veganism. And so plant-based foods and over fibrous, like you're eating too much fiber, too many fruits, that's actually going to create a Prevotella overabundance too. So if you know anyone with rheumatoid arthritis, they absolutely do not need to go near a plant-based diet because there's huge research between Prevotella and rheumatoid arthritis. But any type of joint pain as well in athletes, you really want to look at the bacteria that you're fostering. So sprinting actually creates a better microbiome for fighting off these illnesses, which is amazing. So we have these things called Bacteroides, which comes from foods like animal protein and also from sprinting in high intensity work. So it's really fascinating that the microbacteria change according to what type of training that you're doing. Okay, number three.
Jeez, I'm already convinced at two, but we will go through the 10 but before we let you go. This is fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, good. Number three, sprinters are smarter than distance runners. Okay, don't get mad at me, distance runners. That's only because of BDNF. So brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Again, it's a fertilizer for your brain. When given cognitive tests, the researchers showed that the sprinters answered the questions with more knowledge and retained knowledge after sprinting rather than after endurance training. So there's actually a specific study on this. It increased knowledge through BDNF. Sprinting makes you happier. Number four, this is because of BDNF as well. So the research shows that BDNF is correlated to anti-anxiety and anti-depression. And this is, again, increased more through sprinting than it is through endurance training. So if you want to get happy, there's, again, specific research for depression and sprinting. If you look it up in PubMed, if you want to get happier, start doing some high-intensity sprinting. Number five, overuse injuries. We talked about this a little bit. My physical therapist, when I interviewed him, he agreed with this. And the research shows that overuse injuries are more abundant in endurance training. So you're repetitively overusing tendons, you're abusing joints, that sort of thing. And in sprinting, a lot of people are afraid of pulling a hamstring and that sort of thing. However, if you start slowly and progress and you do this proper strength training so that you don't have these imbalances, you don't have to worry about that. Number six, heart health. Really interesting. There's this term called cardiac remodeling. And it used to be that some people thought cardiac remodeling was a good thing. And this meant that your heart muscle got harder as you did endurance training. But what they're finding is the more cardiac remodeling you have from endurance training, actually the worse your heart risks are for heart attacks and arthrosclerosis. Pretty tongue-tied on that one. But so your heart health, actually, sometimes people are shocked. They'll say, oh, I have this friend, he's so fit, he does marathons all the time, and he had a heart attack. How is this possible? I thought that's supposed to be heart protective. But in fact, your heart likes these short bursts of intense activity and then rest. Your body in general likes these short bursts of intense activity and then rest. Andrew Huberman talks about this in his podcast a lot. And I think that he has got more of the scientific basis with the studies. But it just seems that once you cross like that hour and a half threshold, when you get past that, your body is starting to become under too much stress. And so this thickening of the heart, sometimes it's called athlete's heart, actually makes you more at risk for heart problems. So you really want to watch that with the endurance training. And I have a friend who's just in his 40s and he's experiencing that because he's a lifelong triathlete and he likes to do Spartan races and things like that. So he's constantly doing this endurance training. And he just went to the doctor because his heart started having arrhythmia and started bothering him. And they said, yeah, you have athlete's heart. So we really need to watch that. Okay. So number seven, body fat percentage. Now, if you look again at body types of sprinters and endurance athletes might be skinny due to calorie restriction and burning calories, but they're not holding a significant amount of healthy muscle tissue. And that muscle tissue is what keeps our hormones balanced and that sort of thing. So we see, for instance, distance runner girls a lot of times are missing their periods. They have poor hormone health. They don't know why they have acne. They have these mood swings. All of these things have to do with the type of muscle that they're carrying and the body fat percentage. So they might look skinny, but they might be like skinny fat, as we call it. And I've found this many times. So the body fat percentage, if you're looking to lose that little bit of body fat percent and be in the optimal range, which Charles discussed as between 12 and 15% for a female and 6 and 10% for a male, no matter what your age, this is where you need to be living for optimal health and well-being and performance. And I can attest to that. Under 12, you start getting into, for women, a little bit of the thyroid issues, and under 6 for men. But if you're living in that range, you're doing well. If you're above 15 for a woman and you're like 18, you're just borderline. You really want to be in that 12 to 15% range. And the best thing to do is sprinting for this. Why? Because sprinting and research, they show it burns body fat for 2 hours after you're done sprinting. The distance running, you have to run for 2 hours and burn the body fat. And then when you're done running, it stops. But sprinting, you run for 20 minutes, you burn that body fat for 2 more hours. This is why Dr. Sean O'Mara has done a lot of work with visceral fat scans. And he shows that sprinting is the best thing to eliminate visceral fat as well, which is, you know, adipose fat is what I measure on the outside, and the visceral fat is the fat around the organs. Sprinting, he says, is the best way. Okay, so body fat percentage number 7. Number 8, we talked about helps build muscle mass as we age. So just not too much to go into there. We need that muscle mass. If you look at the 100-year-old sprinters in Masters Track, or my friend Krista Bordignong, who's 85 and crushing world records in the 60 and the 100 and long jump even, she's just crushing it. She's just incredibly mobile and spry and just on it. All of the things we just mentioned, she's smart, she's happy, all of those things. And she lifts weights. She does resistance training. So the sprinting and the resistance training help her, both help her hold muscle mass. So muscle mass as we age, very important. Mm. Okay, number 9, reactive oxygen species, ROS, oxidative stress. These are the things that damage our DNA and our cells. And this is more abundant in endurance training. So they measure the ROS in endurance athletes, and especially the longer you go, marathon, they measured it. It's still really, really high, hard to mitigate through antioxidants. Endurance or ultra endurance athletes, there's research that says there's no amount of antioxidants that can reduce the damage from the oxidative stress of an ultra marathon. So the longer you train, the more mileage you put in, the more you're damaging your cells. And if you're not pounding the antioxidants, which again, what are you taking for that? Is it fruits? Is it fruit juices that come with high sugar and cause inflammation? Like this, again, this is like a formula for injury in my eyes. If you just do the short duration with the animal protein, that leads to the overall well-being and the happiness, and then the less cell damage. Actually, so you're repairing your cells better. Your mitochondria is repairing faster. Okay, number 10. This is one of my favorite things to talk about, AQP4. AQP4 is aquapropin 4. It's a water channel that, which I'll just say right here, I have a very good friend who says there are no water channels. It's a whole uproar in the scientific community that maybe there it's actually proteins, not channel water channels. But we'll just leave it at water channels. It's a channel that's at the end feet of your astrocytes in your brain. And what happens when we sleep is our brain cells shrink, our glial cells shrink, and the cerebrospinal fluid comes through and cleans out all the junk in your brain. It's called the glymphatic system. And scientists really only discovered it about 15, 20 years ago tops. We know about the lymphatic system that does that through our body, but the glymphatic system is the one in your brain. So when it flushes all those amyloid beta proteins and all the plaque and junk out of your brain, the metabolites, it has to go somewhere, and it gets flushed into your lymphatic system at your AQP4 channel. What they've found is that even if you eliminate the amyloid beta plaque, that still does not cure Alzheimer's or dementia. And so, or Alzheimer's is a type of dementia, right? So dementia illnesses. But if you keep the polarization of the AQP4 channel correct, that will eliminate the Alzheimer's. So I'm not saying it's the cure for Alzheimer's, but I'm saying there's a lot of research that needs to be honed in more on this AQP4 channel. And that is because if the polarization is not correct, those plaques and that junk can't be sent to your lymphatic system to be eliminated by your body. I hope that makes sense, because that's the more scientific one.
Yeah, get enough sleep and sprint, and then you
right.
got the,
so the things that keep your AQP4 polarized properly are sprinting and eliminating toxins. Alcohol is the number one way to depolarize it. but if you exercise and you sprint specifically, your AQP4 channel is properly polarized. So brain health, that's one of my favorite things.
Oh my gosh, that's my top 10.
I know it's
oh my
expensive.
Gosh. I knew we were going to go deep, and that's what's so great about you. You're hitting it on all levels, deep into the science, and also that personal peak performance. It's a rare combination, really, and so it gives you tremendous amount of credibility, because you know, someone might come on tomorrow to challenge some of your top 10, but it's like, hey, the girl's running a 57, so shut up and listen to what she's saying. And working with so many great clients too, so People, really we gotta get connected with this girl. So tell us about your two awesome Instagram channels and elsewhere how we can learn about your services, especially the consultations and the offerings that you have for anybody.
Yeah, mahalo. I appreciate it. So Fast Over 40 is my Instagram, my main Instagram. And then MamStrong808 is my business Instagram. I have an assistant that runs it, but I interact with it, of course, and she tells me all the messages and things like that. But she's mostly likes to concentrate on posting like what supplements she likes and you like and that sort of thing. So MamStrong, and then my website is mam808.com or .org, either one. So mam808.org. And that's when you can schedule a consultation. I'm booked for July, but I have some available for August. I don't always have availability. And I do in-person in Maui. Occasionally I'll pick a city and I'll take like 4 or 5 appointments in that city.
Nice.
And so sometimes I might be in your neighborhood, you never know. For in-person consultations, which are the most accurate, but I can still get a very good picture through phone consultations. And those I schedule on my website as well. So yeah, I hope that your listeners have learned something today and have taken something with them that might inspire them and might, teach them that you're never too old. It's never too late. My parents are in their 80s, just turned 80, and they are making differences. My mom's lost, 15 pounds in a year just by taking away her candy and replacing it with protein. Like just little steps, and they're really enjoying their quality of life now that they learned how to take care of their bodies. I'll just put it that way. So it's never too late and anyone can do whatever they want. If you want to become a world champion, I'd be happy to help. If you just want to sprint for your health, I'm happy to help with that too. And I definitely share a lot of information on my Instagram.
And positive energy all the time. The Aloha spirit, Cynthia Montileone. Thank you so much for joining us. I think we're going to have to get you back on in due time. And there's tons of other topics we could talk about. But today, lots of learning, lots of inspiration. Thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Aloha. Thank you.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
I want to discuss the incredible benefits of red light therapy and how you can get started with Mito Red Light. Mito, like mitochondria, red light makes the premier light therapy devices in the world and at incredibly affordable prices. I stand in front of my Mito Pro 1500 unit every morning, carefully exposing my eyeballs, other important balls, and my entire body to special wavelengths of red and near infrared light. When I tell people about my daily devotion to red light therapy, they typically ask, "Does this stuff really work?" And the answer is yes, and there are thousands of studies supporting its effectiveness. Here's how. It's called photobiomodulation, where specific wavelengths of red and near-infrared light, red's visible, near-infrared is not visible, that's why it looks like only half of your panel's working, these wavelengths help mitochondria in cells throughout your body produce more energy and clear waste products more efficiently. Red light exposure helps mobilize nitric oxide trapped in the mitochondria and allows oxygen to return to the cell and increase ATP production. The benefits are proven again and again for skin health, muscle recovery, joint pain, and numerous inflammatory conditions. Red light therapy is also beneficial for circadian rhythm alignment, because we generally get far too little direct sunlight and too much indoor blue light from screens and light bulbs at the wrong times. You don't hear much about this benefit of red light therapy, but when I turn on those lights first thing in the morning, as soon as I wake up, I walk across the hall, I stand in front of the panels, and I feel instantly awake and energized. And believe me, there's a lot of days where Mr. Health Guy here wakes up feeling a little groggy and a little whiny, like I don't want to get up now and get into my morning exercise routine. But when I stand in front of the lights, in 1 minute, I swear I feel wide awake. I get all that grogginess out naturally. It's super powerful, super effective. Besides all the healing and the cellular benefits, I also love it for being a natural wake-up machine. You have to try red light therapy. I am certain that you will become a devoted user. And guess what? Mito Red Light offers a 60-day no-risk trial period. and a special 5% discount for BRAD podcast listeners. Just visit mitoredlight.com and use the code BRAD on any of their products. Go for it today and get started on your red light journey.
Thank you for listening to the show. I love sharing the experience with you and greatly appreciate your support. Please email podcast@bradventures.com with feedback, suggestions, and questions for the Q&A shows. Subscribe to our email list at bradkearns.com for a weekly blast about the published episodes and a wonderful bi-monthly newsletter edition with informative articles and practical tips for all aspects of healthy living. You can also download several awesome free ebooks when you subscribe to the email list. And if you could go to the trouble to leave a 5 or 5-star review with Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to the shows, that would be super incredibly awesome. It helps raise the profile of the BRAD podcast and attract new listeners. And did you know that you can share a show with a friend or loved one by just hitting a few buttons in your player and firing off a text message? My awesome podcast player called Overcast allows you to actually record a soundbite excerpt from the episode you're listening to and fire it off with a quick text message. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And remember, be rad.